Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy Friday. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am great. It was kind of a short week, which is fine, after Memorial Day. It's always nice. That's the great thing about a three-day weekend is that the work week that follows is short, too. So, I mean, you know what? We just should do that every week, right? So.
Well, and I got a double bonus because today is my twins' birthday. So it was hard to work any work into a day like that anyhow, you know.
Yeah, of course.
We got Memorial Day on one end of the week, and we got the twins turning five. Can you believe that? Twins turned five today.
That doesn't seem right, Phil. I remember well when they came along, so that's amazing. Time flies.
Time is flying. We talk about accelerating change, and there you go, my twins turned five. But we got some serious fun geeking out to do this evening. Stephen, I feel we've earned this show. I feel we've earned the show this week, and I feel we've earned it over the last few weeks by consistently cranking out tons and tons of great futuristic goodness, lots of news. We've talked about serious topics this week. We've talked about fun topics this week. And tonight we're taking our little add-on, tag-on, end-of-the-week feature, Other Geek, and we're making it the whole show because it's time for a geek-out show. So we're doing Other Geek tonight. We're going to talk about Hero Smackdowns and the future of nerdiness, I called it. I don't know, just for fun. But I thought we'd, let's talk a little bit about our two big superhero movies that we've been meaning to talk about. And time permitting, we've got a few other little geeky things we can lay out for the listeners. But just heads up right now, if you haven't seen Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, if you haven't seen Captain America Civil War, you might want to stop listening if you don't like spoilers. But if you like spoilers, continue listening because this is a no-holds-barred, spoiler-laden reviews of both of these movies as we compare and contrast. And not so much that, but really just kind of talk about our impressions about them and what they, what they say to us is both as geeks and as futurists. I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about both those. So does that sound like a good plan to you?
Yeah. And I would guess that a large percentage of our audience has seen these movies that they care to. I think that we haven't lost most of our audience. I think they'll stick around and. Because they've seen these movies anyway. So, I mean, and when you mention one of these movies, you really have to mention the other, don't you? I mean, they're covering similar ground. There's themes that are present in Superman versus Batman, or Batman versus Superman, or whichever, that come up in Marvel Civil War, right? I mean,
absolutely. Well, I mean, this is the big driving, the big dramatic push in both movies has to do with the fact that sometimes, let me see if I characterize this correctly, sometimes when superheroes are doing good things, terrible things happen. And in Batman vs. Superman, this is Superman fighting General Zod and the other Kryptonians over the city of Metropolis. And, I mean, it looks like in Man of Steel, like thousands of people must have been killed in that fight. I mean, hundreds anyway. I mean, that's just horrible destruction. At the beginning of Captain America Civil War, we have a much more contained episode where our heroes, in the process of doing a good thing, in the process of protecting a group of people, end up passing an explosive device into a very bad place and a bunch of people get killed, like maybe a few dozen people get killed, right? So it's not quite the same scale, but it almost has more gravity in that sense, right? Because I almost feel like in Captain America: Civil War, they take the issue more seriously than they do in
right.
Batman versus Superman. And in fact, if I was going to say, if you want to explore that theme, hands down, Captain America: Civil War does it better, because you know, Superman never owns it that I can think of in Man of Steel or in Batman versus Superman that he has had a role in all this, right?
And there's a lot more collateral damage that's that you could directly point to Superman, and then these other heroes, right? So
he doesn't seem to
allow it to phase him, and really. That's not the collateral damage issue. Is not the reason. I don't believe that ultimately drives Batman to confront him. I mean, I think it has less to do. I mean, of course, he was outraged by what he saw happening in Metropolis. He was there,
right?
We learned
right.
in this movie.
Yep.
But ultimately, that was not the issue. The issue was this: that you know, a person with the powers that Superman has could wipe out the entire world. And if there's even a slight possibility, he says to Alfred, then I have to take it as a certainty that's going to happen, and therefore have to stop him. You know, that calculus actually makes some logical sense, doesn't it?
It's not completely wrong. Yeah. The thing is, if you look at it that way, you kind of go, well, that's hard to argue with. You know, you say, well, if there's a 1% chance that this guy's going to do this, then we have to stop him because
we can't take a 1% chance of the world ending at his hand.
But what puts him into that place, right? I mean, this is my daughter and I were talking about this, and she said that. The thing about Batman versus Superman is that for virtually the entire movie, Batman is a bad guy. And I think that's true. I think, you know, he's essentially the villain in that movie because it's the collateral damage thing and his own kind of scarred, you know, childhood trauma that put him into the place where he's thinking about it that way, right? Because that's not the only way to look at it. And if you get to know Superman, you realize that there's not a 1% chance. Superman's never going to do that, right? He's never going to turn on and deliberately... hurt people, obviously.
Well,
Superman. Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, the problem that I had with Batman versus Superman, it was sort of a joyless outing for me, okay? And we saw the beginnings of this in the Superman movie, Man of Steel.
Yeah.
His parents, basically, you know, you don't owe this world anything, his mother said in this movie, this more recent movie. And in the last movie, he was getting a very similar message from his adopted father.
Yep.
And that is not the character of those people as I know them.
Right.
Okay? They raised Clark. The reason that Superman is the man that we can trust and know that it's going to be, you know, good for the world, right, is because of the people that raised him. We're talking that... the down-home, you know, folks that, you know, rural Kansans that raised him with good American values, right? I mean, it sounds completely corny now, but that is what we know about those people. And they just take that and flush it away. And Superman himself seems like he's, you know, borderline depressed all the time. He doesn't seem to be having a lot of fun being Superman.
I mean, the problem with this version of Superman is that they've taken a sense of destiny, right? If you look at the original Superman movie, and I feel they captured this from the comics very well. If you look at the original Superman movie, the message he gets from both of his fathers, right, from both Jor-El and from Pa Kent, is that, you know, he's here for a reason. There's a good thing he can do. And and yes, you know, the Kevin Costner version of Pa Kent hints at that a little bit too, but it somehow, instead of being a fun, glorious destiny, instead of being this wonderful, amazing thing, because what could be cooler than getting to be Superman? It's this terrible burden that's been laid on him, right? And, you know, because just apparently nothing can ever be good news in this world, right? That this movie takes place in, which is really unfortunate because it should, you know, there should be a contrast between Superman and Batman, you know, in terms of their outlook and life. And unfortunately, in this world, they're very similar guys. You know, I mean, they're you know, they're both very brooding, very dark, and I think that's unfortunate.
Because being the most powerful man in the world and being beautiful at the same time, being this attractive guy, it's just a bummer. You know, I mean,
yeah, exactly. Well, but contrast it with what goes on with the characters in Captain America: Civil War. You know,
right.
I feel like, well, for one thing, there's real continuity in how those characters behave. So what you see in this movie, in Captain America: Civil War, is this wonderful payoff of things that have been building in the other movies, right? Which is really cool. So when there's tension between, there's a line when Cap is explaining to Iron Man why he had to do what he had to do. He says, he was my friend. And Iron Man says back to him, you know, Robert Downey says back to him, so was I, you know. There's this moment of, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, these guys really, you really believe that these are friends who are having a fight. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
You really believe these are two people who've been huge, you know, people in each other's lives and who've been through terrible things together, and now there's this rift between them. I mean, it really... really works. It's really effective.
Well, and you understand the point of view of both of these men.
Yeah.
Tony Stark, you know, from way back in Iron Man 2, basically tells Congress to, you know, to stick it up their butts. You know, I'm not, you know,
right.
You can't have my Iron Man suit. I'm Iron Man, and I'm not accepting any oversight at all.
Right.
And And then he arrogantly invents Ultron, right? And he sees how that nearly ends the world, and he's a different man now.
Right.
I mean, there's been a progression in the Tony Stark character, and he's you know what? I'll take the oversight now. I need the oversight.
Right.
I've reached a point I realize that it can't just be me making the calls as to when these things, you know, when this justice is applied, right? And
exactly.
So, and you can understand where he's coming from on that. And you could, you go, yeah, maybe you do, Tony. You don't need to just on a whim, create unfriendly AI. That's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's true. I think the arc of Tony, and it meets the arc of Cap, right? Who's been through his own experience, and it's real interesting that Agent Carter dies at the beginning, right? So you got this.
Well, and here's the thing, you know, Cap just went through, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. turns out to be, you know, having been to a large extent run by Hydra, his old enemy, and he's like, no, I'm not taking oversight. I you know, what if I need to go somewhere they tell me I can't? And what if they send me somewhere that I don't need to be?
Right.
You know, I can't just do that, Tony. I'm not going to do that. I'm going. I have to trust my own heart on this because I know what happens when, you know, when the people that you've the oversight turns out to be, you know, who's going to watch the watchers? Basically, is his point.
Well,
and,
right. Exactly. I mean, here you got this guy out of time, right? You know, he's still got to be reeling from the fact that he's living in another time. He's just gone through this horrible, you know, betrayal of S.H.I.E.L.D. turning out to be Hydra. He's gone through this terrible trauma of finding out that his best friend was this murderer, right? You know, and of course, you know, that has implications over on the Tony Stark side of the story as well. He loses, like, the last remnant of that old life, right? She's gone. And it's like,
yeah,
what's
Peggy's
he got
gone.
Left? You know, Agent Carter dies, right? And so what's left for Cap is his own moral compass, right? And he still believes in it, and he still knows that, you know, that he's got to do the right thing when circumstances call for him to do the right thing. It's real interesting the contrast between those two characters, both of whom you like, both of whom you can see their point, and how they come to very different places, right, in how they approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to get to that quote that was said. They gave the quote to Peggy Carter by way of sheriff, right, at the funeral. That great quote it originally was written in the comics as coming from Cap himself.
Oh, okay.
And that quote is, "Doesn't matter what the press says, doesn't matter what the politicians or the mob say, doesn't matter if the whole country decides that something's wrong, that something wrong is something right. This nation was founded on one principle above all else, the requirement that we stand up for what we believe,
right,
no matter the
right.
odds or consequences.
Right.
When the whole world tells you to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree and tell the whole world no. You move."
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to go for it anyway, but then she tells him that from the grave, basically, and it's like, oh, well,
right.
You know, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way he's doing that. So yeah, so I think that whole conflict, the whole setup, worked in. I mean, it just, you know, the people who made Batman vs Superman, they should sit down and they should watch Captain America: Civil War a few times and internalize the lessons of, you know, how you actually tell a story like this. Because, I mean, they did it right with Captain America: Civil War. They did not do it well with Batman versus Superman in terms of the big themes and in terms of the big message. But if we just talk about, you know, are there things to like in both movies? What did you like about Batman versus Superman? What, if anything, did you like about it?
Huh. Ben Affleck makes a good Batman.
I thought Ben Affleck was good as Batman.
Alfred was awesome.
Jeremy Irons, you can't beat Alfred. You can't beat Jeremy Irons as Alfred. I think that's a great casting choice.
I'm hopeful
for two on those.
I'm hopeful then that the Batman standalone movie in this universe is going to be great. I think it's going to be directed by Ben Affleck himself, who will have story approval, and perhaps he can look at this bit of a mess of a movie and see what they got wrong. And you know what? There's about four different stories they were trying to cram into this movie. They were trying to do too much with this movie. How about just a simple Batman story that, you know, and you know, just a kind of a one-off story or something. And, you know, they were trying to do the Frank Miller Batman. They were trying to do the Death of Superman. They were trying to do the Flashpoint Paradox.
Yeah.
What else? There's like, and they're also trying
to Dark Side's in there. I mean, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Although I'll tell you something I really liked in the Batcave was that apparently Robin uniform with the message from the Joker on it. So apparently this is an older Batman. Dick Grayson's gone. Jason Todd is dead. Right. So this is.
Right.
I mean, apparently, that's what we're being told, right? So that much of Batman history story is being acknowledged and brought into the arc, I love, right? And I hope they stay with that. And I hope that they keep that kind of context with Batman, because I think that would be great. And I agree. Yeah, I just think generally speaking, Ben Affleck did a pretty great job. To me, the highlight of the movie is Wonder Woman. Okay, I like the actress. I like everything she did. Every moment, it's like she stole every scene she was in. I love the way she kind of, you know, she kind of managed Batman, which was cool. She worked for me totally. And maybe it's because they didn't do too much of her, right? There was enough Wonder Woman to get you interested, and it was like, it's kind of like Scarlet Witch. For some reason, the superheroines' names never get used, right? I mean, no one's called Black Widow for like 5 years, right? But we all know that's her name, but nobody calls her that. And, Wonder Woman, hopefully someone will call her that in one of the subsequent movies, so we'll know, oh, that's who that is. But she was awesome, you know, when she's lassoing Doomsday there. That was, I liked that. As mopey and disagreeable as I find this version of Superman to be, I really did like the scenes between him and Lois.
Yeah.
It was nice.
They were brief. They were relatively brief. And
yeah, there wasn't much of that, but okay. Yeah, everything I liked in the movie was pretty ephemeral, I must say. The things I liked the most are these little snippets of...
Well, put it this way, I've already seen Civil War twice.
Yeah.
And I never see movies twice in the theater, but I have with Civil War. I don't know that I'm going to bother to buy the DVD of Batman vs. Superman.
Oh,
you know,
well,
I'd
catch on Netflix or whatever, right? I mean, yeah,
you know. Maybe. I don't know. And background noise as I walk through the room, perhaps. It's just not, there's not enough fun in it. I mean, you know, these things have to be fun.
Right.
Or, what's the point? We're talking superhero movies. Now,
superhero movies should be fun. I agree.
They've got to be fun first. And then you can deal with,
then everything
serious
else.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of fun in Batman vs. Superman, but it's like it almost sneaks in.
In spite of themselves, they gave us a little fun.
Mostly it's not there. Contrast that, though, with Captain America Civil War. Let's talk about that one. Now, obviously, there's a laundry list of things probably you like. But what was your favorite thing about it?
Okay, there's just a couple of fun things. Okay, first, when Winter Soldier runs out of that tunnel, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the motorcyclist passes by, and he grabs that motorcycle.
Yeah.
And flips that motorcycle around his body, basically using the momentum of the motorcycle to flip it around his body and then mount it in midair and take off. Was that not the coolest thing ever? Okay, just as a move, as a superhero move, wasn't that the coolest thing ever? That was fun. then when Ant-Man was introduced to Captain America and he geeks out.
He's starstruck. That was great. That's a really funny
moment. And very true to life. I mean, if we lived in a world where Steve Rogers was real, and you or I met Steve Rogers, we'd be like, oh my gosh, it's Captain America.
Well, and that actually gets at something that they can explore in the Marvel Universe that has never really been dealt with very much in superhero movies. You see it sometimes in the comics a little. And do you remember a movie called Mystery Men? Years ago,
I remember that
dealt with this idea of there's hierarchies of superheroes, right? There's the really big important ones, and then there's these lesser kind of wannabe ones, and there it is, right? Here's Ant-Man. He's kind of like an accessory superhero meeting one of the real guys.
Ant-Man's like, I know that you know a lot of super people. And thanks for thinking of me.
Yeah, thanks for thinking of me. Yeah, it's a great moment. It's very well done, and
of course,
Spider-Man. I liked it when Ant-Man became giant. I just thought that was.
And of course, it even gets Iron. Iron Man. Does anyone else have any amazing secret abilities that they need to tell us about? that was pretty great. Of course, Spider-Man. Every scene he was in, he was note perfect, and. I have not enjoyed Spider-Man as much since Spider-Man 2, and maybe not ever. Spider-Man 2, I just think is a great movie. This new Spider-Man, he's very young. He's 15 years old roughly, as he's being portrayed, and it just got it right, So.
I thought he could have been older and more serious personally. Okay, I was a little surprised actually where they took Spider-Man. I was like, oh, really? It's like now we're on the third reboot of Spider-Man. I understand this is the Spider-Man being incorporated into the MCU, and in fact, that probably now Sony is going to use one of the different versions of Spider-Man in their movies.
They're going to use this Spider-Man in their movie.
Oh,
Spider-Man Homecoming. You see, what Sony has done is they've said, okay, Marvel Studios, you have creative control now of our property, Spider-Man.
Oh, geez. If only Fox would do that with Fantastic Four. That would be so awesome.
Fantastic Four needs to be brought in. I don't know how they could bring in X-Men at this point. X-Men is just, I don't think they could be brought into the MCU. I just don't. But they could certainly bring in
the
Fantastic
Four. No, you
totally can.
The way you do it is you do it through a parallel universe storyline, right? You do
it
the old Earth 1, Earth 2 from Justice League. back in the day. That would be the way to do it. But it seems to me they've got detente, right? Because they're sharing characters, they're splitting characters, right?
Right.
So Quicksilver belongs to the X-Men, and Scarlet Witch belongs to the Avengers, right? They just kind of worked that out between them somehow. I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say about
that? Well, I was just going to say, so I completely interrupt your thought, Phil. I'm sorry. But Spider-Man Homecoming is, you know, I mean, it's creatively controlled by the Marvel Cinematic Universe so that it fits in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but Sony profits from it. And I think Sony just had reached a point that, you know, what we're putting out is inferior to what we're seeing in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We want to plug into that and get the money that we would get from a product that would fit into this universe. And so that's what's happening. And so I think we'll see a lot of Spider-Man teaming up with the Marvel Cinematic Universe characters. But even in the standalone Spider-Man movies, it's going to be this Spider-Man going forward. And
well,
since
and I hope they work the other way. I hope they bring in some of those characters. You know,
into Spider-Man shows. I mean, you know, have Captain America or somebody show up. That'd be cool too. But it's you know, I think it's very wise of Sony, and you know, a lot of egos had to take the back seat, didn't they, for them to make that choice. But I think it came down to money.
Yeah,
it's
a smart business decision for sure. 20th Century Fox, if they got smart, they would. And I've been reading about how Marvel's been playing hardball and doing terrible things. Like they don't publish the Fantastic Four comic anymore, right? And they've killed off Wolverine in the comics because they're trying to, you know, I mean, they're going all Disney, right, on trying to get these properties back. But an alternative, it seems to me, would be to do exactly what they're doing with Sony here, and that is to share ownership of these things. There's plenty of money to be made off all of these Marvel properties, and it would be so cool to get to properly get the Fantastic Four in there. Because one thing that kind of makes me sad is like, well, okay, this is really cool that there's this Tony Stark, you know, Peter Parker relationship, but that should really be Reed Richards, you know? I mean, it's like Reed Richards should really be in the whole universe, and it bums me out that we're never going to see Hulk fight the Thing, right? You know,
that would be classic, wouldn't it? Well,
these are things,
you know,
I want to see happen, and you know, they haven't enabled them so far. So I hope they.
This partnership with Spider-Man works out for both companies, then, you know, perhaps it could happen for the Fantastic Four. That would be pretty great. Anyway, the point I wanted to make about Spider-Man being young is that this version of Spider-Man, they can stick with a while. You know, this actor is playing 15 right now, believably. He's a little older than that, but he's playing 15 now. You know, I mean, he could stay with this role 20 years easy, right? So, and that's, you know, you could have a lot of movies with his involvement, and that bodes well. On the other hand, you got Ben Affleck, who I like a lot in that role, but I mean, he's retirement age Batman. How many movies are you going to get out of him, you know, before it becomes silly? You know, you can't have you can do one story, you know, with an old Batman, and they kind of did that in this last movie.
Well,
you know, Frank Miller's
Steven,
Batman.
Come on, what about life extension? What about 50 is the new 30? Let's slow down a little bit here. He's not much older than Robert Downey, is he? For heaven's sake, I think.
Well, I'm just telling you, you know, Robert Downey's inside of Iron Man suit.
Batman's
got to do it himself with his own body,
too.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I'm not... You're worrying about this at a level that I'm not. You truly take this... take the geek cake. But if you want to swing it around, it's like, what lessons can DC learn in terms of putting together their DC universe from what's happened with the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I think there's a number of them. And the best thing that Marvel ever did, and they did so many good things, but the best thing they ever did was they put such an appealing, charismatic actor into the part of Iron Man and made that movie that who had any expectations of that being anything, right? It was
right.
Like, well, there have been all these superhero movies. You know, there had been Daredevil, and there had been, you know, there had been this and that, Elektra, right? And here's, like, another one, Iron Man. Not really the most important character in the Marvel comic
I had my doubts about Robert Downey Jr. I mean,
right.
What do we know about him? He had a big drug problem. That's all we knew about him.
Well,
right?
That's right. So you know, it was this real shaky proposition, but personality wise, he was perfect for it. It was a great script,
right.
You know, and they took, they took a slice out of the middle of their universe, and they built around it exactly the same way, right? So they followed
right.
that formula. You know, you put really good people in, you tell a compelling story, and people go with it. Because really, if you compare the two universes, that's like if the DC universe had started with like Green Lantern or something, right? I mean, to have started it with Iron Man, right? He's important. I'm not saying he's not important, but you know what I mean? It's like you would expect that you would build the universe around Spider-Man, right? Or, you know, even Captain America maybe, but not Iron Man. But it worked because they got those two things right. You know, they told a really good story and they had a really good actor playing the part. So I think it's good that they got Affleck in there because he's perfect for Batman. I think he's doing I think he's doing a really good job. Might be time to rethink Superman. I'm just saying. I don't know. That actor could maybe play a different kind of Superman, and that might work. It's probably
it's probably the adjustment
made to the character.
Some happiness in this thing, guys. I mean, come on. I mean, here's what they could do with the next movie to win me back over. The first scene shows Superman just having a moment of exhilaration being Superman. Just having a ball doing something. Just, you know, I mean, he's out barefooting on a glass lake, you know, just, you know, without a boat because he can. He's Superman.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
having a good time and then actually doing something small that is very important to an individual. Just helping some little guy doing some little thing because he could. You know,
right.
Not everything requires that you save the world. Christopher Reeve's Superman got a cat out of a tree. You know, I mean, just
exactly.
Things like that. Just show us that Clark Kent, the good guy Clark Kent, is there inside this, you know, demigod, which is what they're trying, you know, they've just gone too far in, towards the demigod thing, you know?
Yeah, and I think that the whole idea of things being dark has been made this virtue, when it's really not. It's just a stylistic choice, and it's like, it's a great stylistic choice for Batman. It's a really inappropriate one for Superman. And especially between having those two characters together, the great thing is to have that contrast, that really clear contrast.
Well, let me give you an example of the contrast. I mean, they don't hide from the fact that the Captain America thing is kind of corny, okay?
Yeah,
He is a man of the 1940s, you know, raised that way. You know, in the last Avengers movie, Tony Stark says a bad language word, as they said later.
Yeah.
You know, they were teasing Cap later.
Yeah,
and what does Cap do? He goes, language, over the radio, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, right. You're reminding them probably that, hey, there's a lady on this on here. There's, you know,
it's a great
Black
moment.
Widow is listening.
Absolutely.
Also. Yeah, and of course they wouldn't let it go. You know, it wasn't going to be let go. And that's, you know, that is Captain America. They let Captain America be Captain America, and the contrast of him with people like Tony Stark. Is just priceless. I mean, it's awesome, and you don't need to have two dark guys and who can be the most brooding of the two. You need the dark and the light mixed together to make something interesting. And you got that in Civil War, and you didn't get that in Batman versus Superman. So
there you go. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to the Wonder Woman movie. I think that's going to be fun. If they do something really interesting with Aquaman, that'll be fun. We'll see if DC can make something happen. Definitely, they've got the characters and the storylines that they could have something really comparable to the Marvel Cinematic Universe if they put it together right. But I do start to worry about the Marvel Cinematic Universe itself, just in terms of how long can they sustain doing this kind of thing. You know, because my critique of Civil War would be just ease up on the fan service a little bit, okay? And in fact, this is where I'm going to get in trouble with everybody, but I don't care, I'm going to say it. You didn't need Ant-Man or Spider-Man, either one of that movie. They were both brought in. Obviously, it's a business decision because you want to kick off having Spider-Man in the universe, and you know, you need to make your billion clearly off the movie. I understand that making billions is an important thing, but if I look at it as a movie, that was the weakest part, right? Oh, we got to go get some help. I'll go find a superhero who everybody will love to see, and I'll go find a superhero who everybody's going to really love to see. You know, to me, that's just—it's like
well,
fan service.
It was already a much
point.
Smaller story than the comic book. The comic book, I mean, every Superman, superhero in the universe was a part of that story. So it was already a small story by comparison. So the addition of Spider-Man and Ant-Man felt fine to me, and every scene
I
that both
the
of them were
wrong.
In made
me
smile. So, you know, it might have been fan service, but hey, I was the fan being service. So, I don't mind.
I enjoyed it too. But on the other hand,
yeah.
I feel like, okay, I'm being pandered to here. They're pandering to me.
Yeah, and,
I
ate it up.
Yeah, I was okay
with it. I realized I was being pandered to.
One other thing I really liked about it was the reunion of Only You between Marissa Tomei and Robert Downey. It's great that they had a little scene together and that he kept referencing how attractive the aunt was. I thought that
was
hilarious.
Yeah, you're surprisingly attractive aunt. Of course, I don't know if you stayed for the post-credit scene
of course.
With Spider-Man in it, but, you know, we only got a kind of a glimpse of Aunt May before, but they actually showed a good close-up of Marissa Tomei. Fountain of youth she's drinking out of, she needs to keep it up because she's a beautiful lady still.
She looks great. I mean, she's obviously not Aunt May, but I'll take, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hold it against
yeah.
her.
My boys and I laughed as we were coming out of the theater. When we think of Aunt May, we don't think of Marissa Tomei, but you know what? It's fine. We like Marissa Tomei.
Yeah,
so.
It works. She was awesome. All right, Stephen, we're probably
we're over time here, but
over
hey,
time anyway. This is going to be a longer show than we thought. But do we have some other geek or any final parting thoughts on those movies first?
Well, I think we dealt with the movies adequately. I have nothing further about the movies, but wanted to just visit real quick about my favorite 2-person board game.
Okay.
This is, I've been mentioning the games over the last few weeks that I play with my family and everything, and so I wanted to tell you about Seven Wonders Duel. Now, let me start by saying that there is a Seven Wonders that is an awesome game. It's one of my favorite games as well, but it is a game that's it's built for two to seven players. So you're thinking, well, you know, why don't you just play regular Seven Wonders two-person version? It's billed as 2-7, but it's really a 3-person to 7-person game, okay? You have interaction with any player in regular Seven Wonders has interaction with players to their left and players to their right. And so in order for that to really work properly, you have to have at least 3 people, okay? If you do play as a 2-player game, there has to be a dummy player that, I contribute to and you across the table, Phil, contribute to also. That way we have a person to our left and to our right, okay?
Right.
A dummy player, and then the human player is the other person. So that it just doesn't. It's just there really should be an asterisk by that 2 on the box of 2-7 players. It's
but here
really
now you're saying
7.
You got a truly 2-person version of it of the same game.
That's right. What they did is they took the all that makes Seven Wonders awesome in my mind. And built a 2-person only game, and it's a fantastic game. And you feel like after you played it that hey, I got to play Seven Wonders. It's a real fast game. You know, once you've had your first game, it's a 15-minute, maybe 20-minute game tops. And you advance through 3 ages, building a civilization. You can win by a military victory. You can win by just we always say blinding you with science. There's a scientific victory, and then you can just have an economic powerhouse that just blows away your competition, and so you have to monitor what your opponent is going for, and keep them from getting that while at the same time, try to work towards your own victory in one of those 3 ways, it's just a fantastic game. And I always have fun with every time I play with any of my kids, or even with Sherilyn. She, this is one that she can tolerate. She's not the gamer that the rest of us are, but she really likes this one too. So, have to recommend, you know, if you're in the mood for a really good two-person game, Seven Wonders Duel.
Seven Wonders Duel. Okay. Well, that's and that's good because, you know, you can't always get a crowd of people together. Fun to have
that's
two
right.
games that just two people can play, right?
That's right. And it's great. And it doesn't feel, you know, again, you could play Seven Wonders as a two-person game, but it just feels like, oh, this is how we're compensating for the fact that it's not really a two-person game.
Yeah,
it's a
variant.
This
is doing it with no compromise, basically.
No compromise whatsoever, and it feels great. I believe it actually won for the 2015 best two-person game of that year, and it, quite frankly, it's my favorite two-person game. Period. So Seven Wonders Duel, give it a try.
Well, speaking of compromise. My other geek contribution for this week is for those who watch Silicon Valley on HBO, or if you have the chance to watch Silicon Valley on HBO, this week's episode deals with our hero Richard Hendricks, the CEO of Pied Piper. It's a minor subplot, but he meets the perfect woman. She's, you know, she works for Facebook. She's young. She's beautiful. And she's interested in him, which is, you know. the most astounding part about it, probably. But then he learns, rather than using tabs, she uses the space bar to format her code. And I won't tell you how it's resolved, but I want to point out that, you know, that's a lot to swallow for a guy like Richard, is all I is.
Okay.
he has to test his limits as to how tolerant he can be of another human being at that point. You know. Anyway, if you haven't caught that, if you have HBO, if you have access to it, and you're not watching Silicon Valley, and you want to truly geek out, if you want to deal with a show that that talks about the truly important issues like, should you use the space bar or should you use the tab key to format your code? That's the show for you. All right. Well, that does it. That does it, Stephen. We have geeked out as hard about as hard as we possibly can. We're going to have to do that again real soon because that's—I don't know—it's cathartic. I don't know about you, but I feel
it's fun.
10
it's fun.
Lighter. Yeah.
Yep. And it's this is the sort of thing we like to do on Fridays. So I'd say we do this quite often.
Yep. We're gonna. Well, we'll always end with other geek, and if we do a whole half hour or 45 minutes of geekiness once in a while, folks, I know you'll bear with us. Because you love us. And we love you, too. Thanks for being with us. We're going to be back again next week with three brand new shows. And until next time, live to see it.